I'm from College of Dentistry, NYU, so I think I will be the only dentist here in this meeting. I worked with Gunther for almost like 4 or 5 years, and some of the work which I did with him, I'm going to share with you guys. And he is in New Zealand, so I'm going to cover for him. What I'm going to do today is that step by step, how we develop the process of doing research on fate and effects of these transgenic proteins into the environment, specifically into the soil. And then I'll just share you some of the data. So let's go first. I think most of us know what BT is, or Bacillus thuringiensis is. It's an gram-positive rod-shaped bacterium which produces spores, and at the time of sporulation it produces the toxins. And these are some of the different genetic engineered organisms isolated from mycogen formulations. Now, why it is important to study the transgenic or genetic engineered insecticidal toxins, and what are the differences between the normal toxins and the genetic engineered toxins? The first most important difference is the genetic engineered toxins are truncated genes. It is regulated by truncated genes. Generally, the toxins which are normally present in the soil bacterium is a protoxin, which has a higher molecular weight. Whereas when it is truncated, it has been made active by putting a specific 66 kilodalton proteins into the plants. And then it is already solubilized, so it's an active toxin. Whereas in case of a normal toxin, it's not solubilized, it's a protoxin, so it requires a higher pH in the intestine of the insect, where it's get degraded, and then it becomes active. Now what happens when it is released into the environment? It binds rapidly, strongly to the clay minerals and humic acids, substances, and due to that, it accumulates into the environment. Now, this bound toxin, which is active, is resistant for the degradation, and it retains its insecticidal activities. And we have done a lot of bioassays with these clay molecules, and we know that it's remain active for a longer time. And then, as the receptors are also present into the non-target insects, it may be a problem in the soil ecology. So this is the favorite Gunther's cartoon, and he asked me to show you guys. It says, frankly, I think we will regret introducing these organisms into the environment. So, but these are human beings here. Okay. So Gunther's lab have worked on BT toxins, purified BT toxins, for almost like 10 to 15 years. And this is the summary of the studies, what he did. Before entering into the transgenic plants, or fate of transgenic plants into the environment. He studies the purified toxins, and it says that larvicidal proteins from Bacillus thuringiensis, Coustaki strains, or Israelensis strains binds tightly to the clay humic acid complexes and retains its insecticidal activities. The second finding was, which was significant, is that the biodegradation of the toxins was reduced when they are bound. Then the third important one, which I want to focus, is the larvicidal activities of these toxins from BTK was detected for 234 days, which is the longest time studied ever for the purified toxins. And then once these toxins are bound, they are sometimes not available for the microorganisms for the degradation, and that's how it keeps on accumulating. Then came the genetic engineered BT corn, where the truncated genes are transferred into the plants to make them resistant to the insects. And once they are there, then we started working on those organisms or those plants, how they are going to affect the environment. The first study which we did and which got published in Nature was that these toxins are secreted out into the root exudates when they are grown in either hydroponic cultures or in the soil cultures. And here is the data which shows that in the 7 days growing in the Haugland solution, which is the hydroponic cultures, we get a higher amount of toxins, like 5.6 micrograms of toxins was released. And then subsequently in 15 days, the toxin was maintained that level. But at the 25 days, when the tubes were opened, the plants were grown bigger. When the solution got contaminated, the whole proteins were degraded. But when we did these same experiments into the soil, if you see here in 7 days also, it was 2.3 micrograms, then 15 it was 1.8, but the toxicity and the protein remains there into the soil. That shows that this stuff is coming out from the root exudates, and once it is grown in the soil, it retains its activities because it is bound to the soil particles. Then we did some clay studies, and we took different concentrations of montbromolite and kaolite, and we start growing these plants into these soil particles. And once we have this, we have seen that in case of montbromolite, it has a different properties than kaolite. And in montbromolite, a lot of toxins get bind and it retains its activities as compared to kaolite. And after that, we check with the larvicidal activities. In this case, we didn't determine the total protein concentration. We did two assays. First one is doing an immunoassay using the strips. And second one, we did the sensitivity assay using the larvicidal toxicity against tobacco hornworm. So if you see here, in case of 9K, which is a 9 kaolite, here you see the toxicity in the 10 days is 75%. But if you see the montbromolite, it's already increased to 100% in 9M. And it retains its activities for a longer time, almost like 40 days. Then we thought that we were using only one type of genetic engineered corn. So we thought maybe it is just based upon the specific transformation event. So we took almost like 12 to 13 different varieties of BT corn, which was kindly provided by Monsanto to us and other researchers. And we checked for, we repeated the whole experiments again with different transformation event, which includes BT11, 176 and MON1810. And if you see here that the most of the BT levels are highly toxic as compared to MON10, and we don't know the reason why it was that. But in case of BT11, we saw the mortality percentage was 75, 68, and in some of them it was lower, but as compared to 176, it was 37. And in MON10, most of the studies has less toxicity as compared to the BT11. So this made a conclusion that the BT toxins are coming out from most of the transformation events in the BT corn, but like BT11 has a more toxicity. Then we thought maybe this is a specific event only for corn. Maybe there is no other genetic engineered crops may not have a similar kind of effects. So we got some seeds from Dr. Altosor from Canada and some from Neil Stewart from North Carolina. And we compared our studies with BT corn. And here we took the corn, rice, cotton, which has a BT plus and BT minus. We always compare with the isogenic varieties of a specific crop. Then these potatoes are provided by Monsanto to us. Then we have canola and tobacco, which was also having a specific component, GFP protein, which was incorporated with the BT toxins. And this was provided by Dr. Neil Stewart. He was trying to find out the transfer of BT genes from one plant to another using GFP as a marker. Now in this, we found a very significant thing that in BT corn, we have 100% mortality and the toxin was present. It was present in the rice, but the toxicity was less. It was present, the CRY3A protein, which was present in the potatoes, was there, but the toxicity was less. But in case of canola and tobacco, there was no activities. Okay, here you see the only 12.5% of mortality. That means the toxins are not coming out in these two plant groups and including the cotton. So why this is happening? We don't know, because maybe it has based with the transformation event or where in the chromosome these genes have been incorporated. Then what is the mechanism? When we published all these papers, one comment we always get, what is the mechanism of this? Why these big molecules like 66-kilodalton can come out in the root exudates? And still, it's an open question. We don't know why it comes out into the root exudates. But the one mechanism which we can think about is the exocytosis. The endoplasmic reticulum, specifically in the roots, are very closely associated with the membrane or with the... At the time of endocytosis, there are a lot of high molecular weight proteins are secreted out with other compounds like polysaccharide, mucilage, and other enzymes. So we feel that through this process, maybe the proteins are coming out. The first is through exocytosis. The second can be the cells, the dead cells which are present around the root surfaces, can contaminate the soils or hydroponic solution. So to solve that problem, what we did is that we used a dialysis bag. We put the roots and we could start growing the plants in those dialysis bag. The pore size of dialysis bag was corresponding to the 66 kilo Dalton proteins or something like that. And then still we see the proteins were coming out in the hydroponic solution. That means the higher molecular weight proteins were coming out through the root exudates. Then now the second question we had is once the toxins comes out, it is there in the soil. What happens when we plant another crops, when we use another crops? So we did a lab studies. All these works are done in the labs. So now we have BT corn potted into the plants. We check the soils. It is positive for the Cry1AB proteins. And we remove those plants outside. And then we planted other crops like carrots, radish, and we checked for whether these toxins were again taken up by the plant. Now it's a normal question, but we know that it's not going to happen, but we just wanted to check it because this is a very big protein. So we checked it and we incorporated in the soil the purified toxins. We incorporated in the soil with the root exudates, and we did incorporate the biomass of the corn plants. And after specific days, we removed the specific plants like carrots and radish. We checked for immunological assays and we checked for toxicity. And to our surprise, and we were assuming that nothing was present in any of the leaves or stems of all these plants. That means the BT toxins are not taken up by the other crops or other plants which are grown into the biomass of BT corn. Then after that, the second question comes is, and this study was derived after reading in New York Times about Starbucks effect. It came in 2002 that a lot of caffeine was found in the drinking water. So once we thought that if that's the case, is the BT toxin is leaching out into the soil, into the water system? Is that a possibility? So we designed a small columns of 15 centimeters. We incorporated different soil particles, soil mineral clays in that. And we put the purified toxins and we try to see how the toxins are moving from top to the bottom. And this table shows that the toxins move faster in case of kaolinite soils as compared to the montmorillonite soils. And this observation we have seen in montmorillonite soils, most of the toxins was present in the upper top layers of the soil columns as compared to the kaolite. So from this study we came to know that it does passes through the column, but it depends upon the different soil types. If the soil types has a higher amount of montmorillonite or different kind of minerals, maybe it doesn't passes that easily, but it does accumulate into the soil particles. Now that most of the studies were done on the purified toxins, hydroponic culture, then the small ones. Now we want to check what happens to the biomass of BT corn. Because generally when the crops are grown, they take the corn cob and rest of the stuff was turned around into the soil. So what happens to that BT corn? To study that, Gunther has developed this CO2 system where we measure the specific carbon level, and that indicates the degradation of the biomass. So these are the scrubber systems. And these are the only one slide I want to show you is that this is a carbon evolved as CO2 from a soil amended with 0.51 and 2% of ground air dried BT corn leaves and with the isogenic non-BT corn, which are the close symbols. And then we check for the different levels of carbon which are produced into this carbon system, and we check for it. And then if you see here, the closed square ones are the isogenic varieties, and they have a higher level of carbon evolved. That means there is a large amount of degradation happening there as compared to the BT corn. And we have seen this in all the different percentage of the leaves incorporated into the soil. Then here we check the same thing with all other different plants like rice, canola, cotton, and potatoes, and we got the similar results in all that. We got the different results when we were checking for the root exudates, but when we were checking for the biomass degradation in the soil, we got almost the similar results. This study we did, we wanted to check the effect of different into the different plants, and if we got the same results here. If you see here, these are the darker ones are the and isogenic varieties, and which also have a GFP proteins, and then you have this is Bt corn here, and we got that the Bt corn Bt canola degrades less as compared to the wild type. Here, this is the comparison between what we have seen till now. It's CO2 evolution, that is the degradation, lower with the Bt, lower with Bt plus. In the stem also, it was lower with the Bt plus. So difference between the Bt leaves and Bt plus was higher in the Bt stems. Then we did the study using the cotton. Same results were obtained, that the Bt cotton was degrading less as to the wild type varieties. Then we thought that whether this is an effect of a fungus or a bacteria. So we did the same studies. Rather than incorporating the soil, we took the soil. We took the soil suspension. In that, we added either one kind of antibiotics to inhibit the growth of bacteria, and the other kind of antibiotic to inhibit the growth of fungus. And we incubated in that, and we checked for the carbon evolution. And still we got the same results. So it is not a specific component from a bacteria or fungus. Whatever is present, the Bt can't degrade less as compared to the isogenic varieties. Now why this is happening? So we wanted to check why this is happening, why Bt corn has a less degradation as compared to the control ones. So we checked for the sections of the stems of Bt corn. And here we found out that in the Bt corn, specifically in Bt 11 event, the lignin composition was very high as compared to the isogenic varieties. We checked for the lignin components in the other different kind of Bt crops, and to our surprise, there was no significant difference in rice, potatoes, cotton, and canola. But if you see the trend is there. Always the Bt plus always have a higher lignin content as compared to the isogenic varieties. So this studies has to be done more to have a significant differences. We check for, once we have the, in the biomass, we check for bacteria, actinomyces, fungus, protozoas, and nematodes, and we couldn't find a significant difference or the effect of Bt corn biomass into the soil ecology. Then whole of this study moved to the field trials, and we did this field trials with Dr. David Andow, and this is a 3 years field trials. The Bt plants were planted, and after that we keep on collecting the soils and the biomass from there, and we couldn't find any significant difference. This paper came recently in Journal of Environmental Ecology, and we did total cultivable bacteria, we did protozoas here, we checked gram negatives, chitin utilizing organisms, and different fungal properties, but we couldn't find any significant difference. Then we check for different enzymes which are present into the soil, into the field, and which indicates the effect of all these microorganisms, and still we couldn't find any significant differences between Bt corn and isogenic varieties. Then we did DGTE. We wanted to check whether there is non-cultivable microorganisms which are changing drastically. We checked in, this is just one gel, but we did gels for a different time period. And in this also, we couldn't find any significant difference. You can see here in this four graphs, these are the Bt plus and these are Bt minus here. These are the specific graphs generated from the DGTE gels. And in all this fine, in August 2004, November 2005, April 2005, and October 2006, there was seasonal variation was seen there, but there was not a significant difference between Bt corn and regular isogenic varieties. We did some studies, if there is no effect on this, what happens to the biomass when it is exposed to the soil, other kind of organisms. So we used the earthworms to check the activities. Is there any mortality with the earthworms? We took earthworms, we put it into the plant, into the pots, and we couldn't see any major differences. But the Bt toxins was detected in their gut, and we dissected the earthworms, we took out the soil samples from them, from there, and we checked for the immunoassays, and we checked for the toxicity. The BT toxins was present. It was bound to the soil particles. It was present in the cast, and of course, it was present in the soil. So the major finding from all these studies is that Cry1AB proteins were released in the root exudates of BT corn, almost 13 varieties, and the protein was accumulated more in the soil amended. And I will go through this. This is the this one is more significant. BT corn proteins purified in the root exudates, or purified or from the biomass of BT corn, was not taken up by the non-sterile soil, other plants. But it was retained its activity for almost like 3 years. The samples which we got from the field trials, still we have in our freezers, they are active. They are showing insecticidal activities. And this is another cartoon which Gunther wanted me to show. This is Sylvia, and she thinks that after eating some genetically engineered tomatoes, their traits were transmitted to me, to her, and she will stay young and firm forever, and she will be resistant to the budworms. Okay, I don't have a time. Thank you very much. And these are the people, and most of you guys know Gunther Starsky. I put him here purposely because he is not here. Okay, thank you. Any questions? Yeah, regarding the antibiotics, you are right that this was a very vague experiment. It has nothing, there was not a lot of controls. And we don't know whether cyclohexamide or streptomycins are going to inhibit all the microorganisms or the fungus present in the soil. So that was a, it was a not a very definite experiment. Regarding the first one, we did the respiratory that carbon evolution experiments based upon the aerobic conditions. We don't have any other data on that.
Well, all I'm saying is many times people who do soil respirometry will have a kill control. And some of the ways to kill it are not environmentally attractive. Nevertheless, people do have examples of those controls out there. Secondly, you do mention the business of evaluating the aerobic organisms that you were able to assemble in a study with Big Mano. I would submit to you that from the soil perspective, it is believed that 0.1% of the organisms are cultivated. So we have 99.9% of the organisms still contributing to the activity of the soil if we really haven't ascertained their activity.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's the reason we have written a new grant where we want to do the metagenomic approaches and try to identify the using phylochips or other things to identify all these organisms if we know about them. But if we are not aware of it, then we have to isolate those organisms or using a microfluidic devices or something like more advanced techniques. And then once we have there some kind of genome, we will be able to know what are the different organisms present there. We are working in that direction.
Thank you.